fear is not real. The only place that fear can exist is in our thoughts of the future. It is a product of our imagination, causing us to fear things that do not at present and may not ever exist. That is near insanity. Now do not misunderstand me. Danger is very real, but fear is a choice. We are all telling ourselves a story.
You're listening to Revolution Radio at freedomslips.com. 100% listener-supported radio. Reporting the danger, unafraid, right here, where information never sleeps. Revolution, revolution, revolution. Radio!
When you attend a funeral, it is sad to think that sooner or later those you love will do the same for you. And you may have thought it tragic, not to mention other adjectives, to think of all the weeping they will do. But don't you worry, no more ashes, no more sackcloth, and an armband made of black cloth will someday nevermore adorn a sleeve. For if the bomb that drops on you gets your friends and neighbors too, there'll be nobody left behind to grieve, and we will all go together when we go. What a comforting fact that is to know. Universal bereavement, an inspiring achievement. Yes, we all will go together when we go. We will all go together when we go. All suffused with an incandescent glow. No one will have the endurance to collect on his insurance. Lloyd's of London will be loaded when they go. We will.
This is Jim Fetzer, your host on The Raw Deal, where I am simply delighted to have as my special guest Monica Schaefer, whom I regard as a heroine of our time. She and her brother were convicted of that almost awful crime of Holocaust denial, a purely intellectual offense of being skeptical about the official narrative of the ending of World War II, which posits that 6 million Jews were put to death in extermination centers using Zyklon B. Frankly, anyone who's actually looked at the matter, studied the evidence, knows that the whole story is a myth, but some people in some locales can be prosecuted and sent to jail for a purely intellectual offense, which is, roughly speaking, believing or saying that which is true in denial of that which is false. Monica, I can't tell you how happy I am to have you here today. It's just a real pleasure.
Thank you, Jim, for inviting me. I am so delighted to be here. And I look forward to this conversation for the next couple of hours. I'm sure we will not run out of ideas.
Yes, yes, yes. Well, of course, your case got international coverage. They make a point of that. They want to set an example. And, of course, your offense is, in the eyes of the Zionists, most heinous. So here we have Alberta Holocaust denier convicted in Germany for incitement to hatred. Monica, have you ever figured out that hatred part? What was incitement to hatred when you're simply reporting the results of your own research and your sincere conclusion, which happens to be true?
Well, when they get upset about you discovering that way less people died, you would think they should be happy and celebrating that, but no. You see, I guess in a nutshell, truth is hate to those who hate the truth. And you have to ask yourself, when they make laws against debating, discussing, or questioning a certain part of our history, well, then there must be something big to hide. You know, this is what it comes down to. And you know, in this discussion with you, Jim, I would really like to get into how the courts actually dealt with our case.
Oh.
So not only are we not allowed to say certain things, but then we get to the trial and you're not allowed to bring evidence to defend your position, or you're not allowed to explain how you reached your conclusions. This is new crime. That is the crux of it. If you are not allowed to give evidence in court when you're already, I mean, the whole thing is absurd and you're wrongfully imprisoned. I was in prison for 6 months before the trial even began because I was supposedly a flight risk. They had me in their clutches and they did not want to let go. And then the trial, really, you should call it an inquisition, a kangaroo court. Alfred called it the Muppet Show. The judge did not take kindly to that when Alfred in court called it the Muppet Show. And they demonstrated to us every single trial day that it was indeed a Muppet Show. They proved to us every single trial day that they were protecting lies and that we had truth on our side. So, yeah, I mean, it was absolutely an experience that had I not lived it myself, I would have a very hard time to believe that such a thing could be happening now. I mean, this was in 2018. This is just 2 years ago. There are still people in prison for speaking the wrong words, for having the wrong thoughts, for coming to different conclusions about our history. About World War II history, and my brother Alfred is still in prison in Germany.
I find that shocking, Monica, that you and Alfred were both convicted, having received prison sentences in Germany. Did you commit your offense in Germany? Were you in Germany when you were denying the Holocaust?
Well, you know, this very famous video, some people would call it infamous video, it's called Sorry, Mom, I Was Wrong About the Holocaust. I was in Germany when I made that little video with Alfred's help. He lives in Germany. He has been living there for many years, and I went to visit him. This was in 2016. So, yeah, that's where we pushed the button to send it out into the World Wide Web. But, you know, when you put something onto the World Wide Web, I would say, what difference does it make where you do this from? But, yes, I was in Germany. That is true. Okay, so it goes on from there. You know, then I didn't stop talking about it, but this little six-minute video went just exploded. It was translated into several different languages within the first few days, not of my doing. Other people did this. It really struck a chord with people. There are many people in our generation, especially, that kind of have the same experience. You see, what that video is about, I'll just tell you in a nutshell, and it won't take you long to summarize a six-minute video. I apologize. Shall I?
Yeah, go ahead. Yes, I was just thinking we could play it, for crying out loud. But would it be an offense for you to play it? Would Alfred be in deeper trouble?
Oh, no. That would actually be good if you played it, sure.
Well, sure. Let's do a screen share. You're familiar with that? Can you put it up on your desktop and then do a screen share? Do you know how to do that?
Oh, okay. If you don't have it,
I don't have it, but we can play it. No. You know, you go ahead and play it right there on your desktop, and we'll put it in the video.
You know what? On this computer, I don't have it on my desktop.
Okay, that's okay. Go back. You were telling us in a nutshell what it had to say.
I will describe it. And you know, when I'm asked to do a task live, the pressure. It makes me do everything wrong.
Sure.
It would take me 2 seconds to do it if I wasn't under
pressure. I know. Alfred got 3 years and 2 months, and you got 10 months, which is why you're out, but he's still in.
And then he got more prison time, and I do want to address that. I got more prison time. Oh, that I'm just flailing at a mosquito here, but just for defending himself in court and showing how high his dog Pavlov can jump with a certain straight arm gesture, you know, saying, look, this is how high my dog Pavlov can jump. And I'm sure you can appreciate the satire that he was putting forth with that, the name Pavlov. Anyway, when I was a little girl And we actually, first day of school, I start describing this in the video. First day of school, I go with my pretty little German dress, the dirndl dress, and I get taunted. And then actually the second day I get taunted because the kids didn't know on the first day, oh, you forgot to take off your apron, all this stuff. And so I didn't wear that dress anymore to school because they weren't being very friendly and they were doing things like Heil Hitler and all this. And I didn't really know what it was about, but it was just unfriendly. Later, as a teenager, we learned about all those horrors that the evil Nazis did to the Jews, like making soap out of their fat and making shrunken heads and making lampshades out of their skin. You know, this is what we were told. Of course, now nobody even tries to talk about that anymore because those were all admitted lies. But that was all pumped into us and told to us. Anyway, I go home because I was really a sensitive kid, and I go home and I say to my mom, why didn't you and your family, your friends, why didn't you stop those horrors from happening? You could have organized, you know, like I was really traumatized by what they were teaching us. Here I was, a little German girl of German parents, born and raised in Canada. Okay, but my parents came from Germany. They were immigrants to Canada. Anyway, my mom, she listened to me and she was very quiet and she just said, you know, we didn't know. We did not know that all those things were going on.
Yeah, it's impossible to know things that actually aren't going on. You know, I mean, it's just ridiculous. The whole thing was an elaborate stunt, and we've even had admissions from high officials of the Israeli government that it's all a trick. We'll get to that, Monica, but, you know, tell me again what's in your six-minute video.
Exactly. So that, I described that in my video, you know, first day of school, then the reprimand to my mother, and then at about the 2.5 minute mark in the video, and I know that because when I showed it to my cousins, they just bolted up out of their chairs and started screaming at us when I said the sentence, now I know why my mother said we didn't know about these things. It's because these things did not happen.
Oh, very good. Very good. Very good. Very nice. Yeah, exactly.
And then the rest of the video, I just explain a little bit, but how much can you really explain in a very short video? But I do recommend at the end of the video for people to look up these other videos. And I named three. I put together three titles that I thought even the titles are good. And the videos, they kind of address a little different angle aspect of this Hollow hoax story. And the three videos were questioning the Holocaust, why we believed. The second one was the greatest problem of our time, and that's Ursula Haverbeck. And the third one was off your knees, Germany, with an exclamation mark after that. And that was Ernst Zundel, the story about what happened to Ernst Zundel. So with those three videos, which if the viewer of my 6 minute video was to watch those three videos to, you know, if this was shocking to them and they wanted to know how did she ever reach these conclusions, they could have watched those and it would have taken them 3 hours and 20 minutes in total to watch those three videos. They would do a lot to start undoing this lifelong indoctrination that we've been fed. Of course, there is way more than that on the internet, and I encourage the viewer to do some research.
Well, I don't know what it is about you Canadians, but Ernst Zundel, of course, was also Canadian. And I have also interviewed him, Monica, and Ingrid, his wife, said she thought it was the best interview he ever did. I have published Robert Faurisson's report about the Zundel trials, 1985-1988, in my book. And I suppose we didn't go to the moon either. A title of which was suggested by my series editor, Mike Palachek, after we published our first, where I bring together groups of experts to dissect issues that are controversial, which was entitled Nobody Died at Sandy Hook, to which he said someone might well reply, and I suppose we didn't go to the moon either. Well, of course, we didn't go to the moon. But not only do I have chapters about the moon, but I have chapters about the death and replacement of Paul McCartney, and I have chapters about the first death of Saddam Hussein, who was replaced by a dummel who was put on trial and hanged. And I have about the second death of Osama bin Laden, who was actually our man in Afghanistan, but who died and was buried in Afghanistan on 15 December 2001, but where Barack Obama found it politically expedient to resurrect him and have him die a second time so he could position himself for a re-election with the triumphal death of the most wanted terrorist in the world when he'd been our man in Afghanistan. I mean, it's quite a story. And then I have these chapters about the Holocaust, and are by Thomas Dalton and Nicholas Kohlerstrom and Robert Forreson. I mean, I'm telling you, if somebody wants a marvelous introduction, serious research on the Holocaust, you want, and I suppose we didn't go to the moon either, now in its second edition, I expanded, I added more. It's really wonderful stuff. So I'm a huge fan of Ernst Zundel, as I am of you and Alfred, Monica. Huge.
Well, thank you. I'm just writing down the title of your book because I would like to get that.
Oh, yes. It's my favorite. I publish a lot of books, and that's actually my favorite of them all because of its diversity, and it's so exciting. Every issue is so unexpected. But I love having you here, and I thought one of the things we would do during our conversation is talk about some of the most basic evidence in the whole case that really is easy to access. I gather you told the court during the trial, I'm convinced the Holocaust is a great untruth of history, that you made the video to make peace with your mother, that she had written the script. So your mother knew the Holocaust was a fabrication, that it wasn't real. Is that correct? And you had initially thought it was and then came around? Was that how it played out?
Okay, yeah, actually the title, I chose that title, sorry Mom, I was wrong about the Holocaust. It's a very ambiguous title and I chose that on purpose to be ambiguous. Because yes, I am making an apology to my mother, but what I'm apologizing for is my reprimanding her when I was a teenager, kind of blaming her, you know, saying you could have done something, you could have stopped this from happening. And you know, I'm not the only one that felt that way about their grandparents.
But so, of course, as you've said, I mean, she couldn't have stopped what wasn't going on in the first place.
Exactly. But you see, our generation, we've been indoctrinated to think of our parents and grandparents as part of this monster generation. So what I, to this day, will never know if she understood what really went on or didn't go on. I don't think she knew that it didn't happen, because after the war, the Germans also were just, I mean, these lies and propaganda and, you know, atrocity propaganda was just pumped into, especially the Germans, actually. So
yes,
when she said to me, we didn't know, that's exactly true. She didn't know. But she didn't say to me, no, it didn't happen. She just said, we didn't know that these things were going on. So I believe that she actually came to think that it did happen. And I can't talk to her because she's no longer alive, you see. And I would have loved to be able to talk to my parents, both of them. But I woke up to this after they died, both of them. You know, my dad lived a lot longer than she did. And he was very political and was very interested in the news and you know, was always, you know, pumping his fist at the television screen when all these things that Israel were doing to the Palestinians, it just made him so angry. And,
yeah,
you know, so... Yeah, and my father, on the other hand, it's interesting because he was nicknamed during high school days. He had a nickname in high school as Jew Lover because he wrote some kind of an essay in defense of the Jews, because what he was seeing at that time, he was born in 1919, my father was, so he was in high school before World War II started, and he was seeing that the Jews were being restricted from this and that and the other thing, and I'm sure that he was subject to still the, you know, propaganda and whatnot. And he's saying, oh, this isn't really fair, is it? But not knowing.
This was in Germany. He was writing this and observing. What year would this have been?
Well, he would have been in the, I would say 1938, 37.
Okay. Just prior to World War II.
Exactly. But, you know, the thing is, he was always in defense of the underdog. He was always defending the underdog all through his life. Or if he saw injustice happening, he was defending them and seeing what was unjust about it. And I don't know why I brought this up in this interview now, but it's just interesting because how things go. You know, like here he was nicknamed Jew Lover because he wrote some kind of an essay because of, from his viewpoint, just like today, most people are kind of indoctrinated and brainwashed. Well, so they're seeing things from a certain perspective. So he would have still, at that time, he would have seen that, oh, the Jews are being shut out of, you know, political life, or and because that's, they were the enemy. They declared themselves the enemy. They declared war on Germany in 1933, for goodness sake. But
That's right. The Judea declared war on Germany in 1933. Most of the world citizens have no idea, Monica.
But later, what I want to say about my father, later he was so upset about what the Israelis were doing to the world and to the Palestinians, and he saw that what was going on, the injustices. I don't think he ever, see, like I say, Alfred and I woke up to things after my both parents died. My father also had already died by the time we came out of zombie land. We were both zombies before that, just like, you know, the indoctrinated folks.
Well, you know, Monica, I'm showing, you can see it, but the audience can't. The title page of the Robert Forasson, but brilliant intellectual revisionist historian, meaning he was trying to go back and get it right, for the Institute for Historical Review about the Zondel Trials 1985 and 1988, to which I made prior reference, where Ernst was actually tried for distributing a booklet, Did 6 Million Really Die? By a fellow named Richard Harwood, published in 1974 in Great Britain, the subject of a lengthy controversy. Several things, but right off the bat, it turns out, for those who actually do the research, there are 236 references to 6 million Jews in dire straits or fear of loss of their lives in the international press, beginning as early as 1890, all before the Nuremberg Tribunal. So, I mean, you know, this 6 million had nothing to do with history. It had nothing to do with the Second World War. It had nothing to do with concentration camps, which, as you properly indicate, were actually labor camps. I mean, you know, what do a bunch of dead Jews do for Germany to advance the war? Nothing at all. They put them to work to perform labor, and typically by major a military installation, such as ammunition factories, for example. Ernst was sentenced to 15 months in prison, but the sentence was tossed and he had a second trial. Now, what's interesting about these two trials, as I'm sure you are aware, during the first, the prosecution could not produce a single witness who could testify under oath to seeing anyone put to death in a gas chamber, a Jew or not. Not a single witness could the prosecution produce. And during the second trial, which was, if anything, even more sensational, the defense produced the leading expert on gas chambers in the world, no doubt, by the name of Luchter, who had gone to Germany. Fred A. Luchter had gone to Germany. He had visited various of the camps. He'd come back with 32 samples and a 192-page report showing that none of the facilities could have possibly served as gas chambers. In other words, there weren't any gas chambers, so obviously the idea of 6 million Jews being put to death in gas chambers was ludicrous. Not only that, but my dear friend and colleague, Nick Kohlerstrom, author of Breaking the Spell, for which I wrote the introduction, which you can find online as a separate standalone piece entitled The Holocaust Narrative, Politics Trumps Science. Nick explained that they were using Zyklon B, which is a mild form of cyanide, to kill body lice because it was spreading. They were spreading typhus and dysentery in the camps, and they wanted to preserve the health of the inmates because you can't get work out of a corpse. So they were using Zyklon B. The number 6 million was just a fantasy. It appears to have had theological origins in Leviticus. There's a disputed passage that's interpreted to read that the chosen people can return to the promised land only when they're minus 6 million who have been consumed in the flames. But Monica, even that requires an interpolation because there was no word for 6 million in the original Hebrew. I mean, there was no word. So this whole thing is a fantasy. And it turns out the International Committee of the Red Cross was keeping copious document records about every inmate who died, their age, their race, their sex, their gender, their religion, their cause of death. They originally had an estimate, I think it was 271,000 wound up, they recalibrated in 1993, 296,081 died from all causes, not one from being put to death in a gas chamber. Monica, I would have thought after the Zundel trials, the very idea of putting anyone on trial for a Holocaust denial would be a legal absurdity. I mean, what's going on?
Exactly. Wow, that was great. You put a lot in there. The Zyklon B thing with the lice, that is in my little 6-minute video. I say they were actually keeping the prisoners healthy. The Zyklon B was used to kill the lice. Lice carried typhus. It was a deadly disease. Many people died from the typhus. Okay, and then you talk about Leuchter. Yeah, he went over there as a believer in the holy cause, the Holocaust. He, of course, and he said, you know, whatever I find, I'm going to report. And, you know, so you could say that if Ernst Zundel wasn't really confident about his conclusion that he had reached about it, he may have hesitated about sending this guy over because he said, yeah, the Holocaust happened. But he does his investigation, very thorough investigation, documented it all with video and you know, witnesses and documenting everything carefully, and then produces a report and comes to the conclusion not a single person has died from being deliberately gassed in the camps. Yes, people died in the camps, just like you said, about
6,081.
And, you know, the Germans were there.
They were so meticulous. They kept such detailed records.
Exactly. So isn't it funny that the Germans are very meticulous at keeping records, and they kind of are laughed at sometimes for being too meticulous about this. And yet, not a single piece of paper has been found that has a plan to exterminate the Jews or carry it out or the intent to do it. No, this was done by mind reading, apparently. That's according to Raul Hilberg. You know, he had to admit in court during the Ernst Zundel trials that you have spoken about that, it must have been through some kind of a telepathic, you know, a nod of the head, a mind. I mean, it was truly absurd. I'd also like to say about the witnesses. So in the first trial, you're right. They weren't able to produce a witness who actually saw what, you know,
anyone put to death in a gas chamber.
But they did have the witnesses during that trial, but not ever again, because the witnesses during that trial got shredded on the stand through cross-examination. Their testimony was shredded. You know, somebody talking about smoke, different colors of smoke coming up the chimney. And by the way, cremation doesn't create smoke up a chimney in the first place. So that was, you know, put like all their testimonies, they had to admit, well, no, this is by, I heard a rumor, or this is by hearsay, or no, I didn't actually see that. Under cross-examination, they all fell apart. And so during the next trial, they didn't have any eyewitnesses. They did have, you know, some kind of Holocaust expert, but Raul Hilberg didn't come back, did he? I don't think during the second one. Some other Holocaust historian came, because Raul Hilberg was also shredded, and he came up with some excuse that he wouldn't go to the next one because it would take him too much time to make sure he was straight on every detail, because they might, you know, make me deny or make me fall on some detail, right? But it really was because he got shredded in his testimony. And I wanted to also respond to what you said about this magic number, the 6 million. Let's just take one example where this 6 million is impossible. By their own calculations, Auschwitz, they used to have a plaque there that said 4 million died at the hands of the the Germans, the Nazis, whatever they said, they're on the plaque. After those trials in the 80s in Toronto, those were very important trials. They took down that sign and they replaced it with another one, 1.5. And then I think they replaced it again. I think it's down to 1.1. So they keep downing their numbers, but 6 minus 3 still magically equals 6.
Yes, I know. It's amazing. It is amazing.
Yeah. And like you say, all these references to the 6 million Jews prior to World War II, you know, 6 million souls or 6 million Jews are under threat, 6 million, 6 million, it's over and over again. That is their cult number. And you know what? I just want to bring this to the present. There was a report, I think it was in the New York Times, that guess how many people are infected with coronavirus? 6.6 million.
I was told, and that's why they started the riot, and they got their magic number, so then I turned to some other calamity. This is all manufactured. I can't begin to tell you. The latest absurdity is they're campaigning to defund the police department. My wife's addicted to MSNBC. Well, actually, I think it was on CNN. And they were interviewing one of the protesters. They were saying, well, you know, we're still going to have murders and rapes and robberies. So when you get rid of the police, how are you going to deal with it? And he tried to say, well, the police are only dealing with the back end. So we got to start with a front end, with the causes of criminality. He wants to turn the police departments into social workers. I mean, that's the damnedest, most idiotic program I've ever seen. If the Democrats want to guarantee they're not going to get a single vote for their candidate in 2020, they're doing a pretty good job of it.
Well, they're pulling out all the stops right now. And as you say, they're creating, manufacturing the stories. I mean, you know, I want to tie this in. How is the Holocaust or the hoax of it relevant to today? Because people, when I first came out with that video in 2016, and then I go home to my hometown, a small town, 5,000 people, I was virtually like sort of the proverbial burning at the stake.
You are an outcast.
I learned a new expression or a new term, a new thing. It's called ritual defamation. And it, you know, in a small town where I was a relatively well-known person before, because I wore different hats, involved in various aspects of the community, culturally and musically, as well as a violin teacher, and then also politically, like I had been running in elections and whatnot for the party, which I now recognize as the worst of them all, basically the Communist Party, but it's not called Communist Party, it's called the Green Party, but they're the Watermelon Party, you know, green on the outside, red on the inside. Anyway, that's another story, but some people, well-meaning friends, they said to me, Monica, why do you concern yourself with this? That happened so long ago. Like, look at what you've brought on to yourself. Like, there's bigger problems now. We have big issues to deal with. Why don't you just, you know, that's not relevant to today. Well, Jim, how can you say that in the same time and then recognize that I was being totally persecuted in my hometown, as well as then later going to jail for this supposedly irrelevant thing that happened so long ago?
Yes.
It's obviously very, very relevant. I call it the linchpin lie, because when we pull this one down, and it is coming down, I think many, many people, more than you can imagine, know that the Holocaust did not happen. But many people at the same time are very afraid to talk about it. But that's why they got to make examples out of people like me or my brother, and also make us look like a bunch of crazies. Made Ernst Zundel look like a crazy man and a bad man. You see, bringing it back to him, at that time that this was going on during the 80s, I was in my 20s, and we heard about it every day on the news, Ernst Zundel, because these trials took months. And so if I had read the fine print of the newspapers, or if I had looked into it myself, I would have learned a lot of surprising things, because evidence actually came out in those trials that would have shown that, hey, this was a lie, this Holocaust. But how did they present it? How did they package it? See, it's always the packaging, the headlines and how they presented on the news. It was, to me, I wasn't really paying much attention, but still I got enough to think that he's a bit of a kook or something, you know. So I didn't really pay attention because it's how they package it, right? So that's how it is. Now, how did I want to bring that to
it was a 6 million, 6 million tying together, the contemporary with the past,
The contemporary, but you know, you were saying, well, how could this even fly in the courts? Like, they brought out all that evidence during his trials. Well, before that and since then, they use this other tactic of not allowing evidence.
Not allowing evidence. I mean, you know, well, isn't that the ultimate absurdity? You're supposed to have a trial and it's supposed to be governed by logic, law, and evidence, and they won't allow evidence? I mean, you know, it's ridiculous. I have been there, done that with regard to my Sandy Hook research. I was challenged in court, and the judge wouldn't allow me to present the results. I had 13 experts who discovered the school had been closed by 2008, loaded with asbestos and other biohazard, damaged by a hurricane, unsuitable for occupancy, that there were no students there, that was a two-day FEMA exercise involving children, which I haven't included in the book as Appendix A. I had this massive evidence, and the judge wouldn't allow me to introduce it. I mean, you know, this is just like your case. You have all this evidence that the Holocaust is a hoax, but he's not going to let you introduce it. I mean, this is insulting.
It starts with the Nuremberg trials. At the Nuremberg trials, right after World War II, the judge gives judicial notice. Articles 19 and 21, people can look this up. Don't take my word for it. Look it up. But when you read Articles 19 and 21 of those trials, they basically, in a nutshell, say evidence is not required for something that is self-evident. If something is common knowledge, we do not need to prove it.
But common knowledge is just popular belief. You know, it was a common knowledge at one time the earth was flat. But I mean, you know, give me a break. So are you going to take judicial notice that the earth is flat? I mean, you know, this is embarrassing, Monica. You're so right.
They declared that the Holocaust happened, and so you didn't need evidence to prove it. In fact, they didn't allow evidence that would talk about anything different other than, you know, what was favorable for them. That was a total, I mean, many people in high places admitted that was a
total. So they ought to have allowed you to introduce all your evidence so you could make a complete fool of yourself. I mean, that ought to be their stance. If it was real, let Monica lay it all out there. And since it's self-evident that she's wrong, she'll just look silly.
So let's go forward to another case in the United States. I'm sure that you heard about this, the Mermelstein, I think, Mel Mermelstein, who after the IHR, that's the Institute for Historical Review, had put out an offer, $50,000 reward for anybody who could prove the Holocaust happened. There was no answer to it. And this guy, instead of, you know, presenting this and getting an award for the reward that was being put out, he sued them, I think, for $3.7 million, something like that. He sued them, and he won that case. Now, how did
he? He won the Institute for Historical Review. He sued them for a challenge, for raising a question. Can anyone prove the whole thing? Why would they be suable for that? I mean, that's ridiculous.
I'll tell you how he won his case, because he said he lost sleep and it hurt. The feelings of, I'm not sure.
Oh, well, now, this is just ridiculous. This is just ridiculous. That's not a real harm. This is an aspect of political correctness today, Monica, that is simply lunatic. If somebody's feelings are hurt, you're supposed to be liable for that, even if what you say is true.
And I think he said he lost some business, too, but because he was, you know, he was disturbed by it or something. But you see, what the judge did there is give judicial notice to the jury. It was a trial by jury, and he said, the Holocaust happened. I give judicial notice that the Holocaust happened. That is not what's under debate here. That is not being contested here. What is being contested here is that this man was hurt by the fact that the IHR put out this reward for anybody to disprove it. So he put judicial notice out. Okay, so now fast forward to our trial in 2018, the trial of Alfred Schaefer and Monica Schaefer, myself, in Germany. So the judge, when Alfred did a lot of talking, he did most of the talking, he was presenting, you know, documentary evidence, all kinds of evidence from Jewish sources, all kinds of things. And they also showed those three videos that I just named in as recommendations, you know, questioning the Holocaust, the greatest problem of all time. They also showed those because they were trying to hold them against me. I was delighted that they showed them because I thought, good, we're going to educate the court here on this story. But they wanted to use it against me to prove that I actually did understand the laws in Germany, because in the Ernst Sandl video, they talk at length about how three countries conspired to get him kidnapped out of the United States, out of Tennessee at the time where he was living, to get him. They extradited him. They put him in a jail in Canada for 2 years in solitary confinement, lights on 24/7, cold, terrible conditions. And then he was sent to Germany and put in jail there for 5 years. So those videos were shown. But what I want to come back to is Alfred. He was stopped by the judge several times while he was speaking, actually many times. So the judge would say, well, got to stop you there. Got to give you the warning that if you continue on that line where you were going now with what you're saying, that's new crime and we'll have to press new charges. Alfred would wave him off and say, you want to lock me up for 6 million years anyway? Well, I'm just going to talk because I'm just speaking the truth, you see. So he did not.
6 million years, yes. A year for each life he denied, yes.
He did.
He denied, that, yeah.
He does put that number in where at every.
Oh, I like that. I like that.
Yeah. He has a great sense of humor.
He has a style.
He has a fantastic style. He writes fantastic letters out of jail. He's full of spirit and full of. Absolutely, just a huge fire of life in him, and he is indomitable in his spirit, and he's got great ideas too. And if we have time during this discussion, I'd like to talk about some of the memes that he creates, his ideas and whatnot. But coming back to the trial, so in that trial, we could not present evidence without doing new crime. In 2019. In August, Alfred was back in court, and he's been in jail ever since July of 2018, by the way. They picked him up from his home at the end of the first week of trial. So just, you know, think about that. There's no verdict yet until October 26th, 2018. But in July, I think it was July 6th, 2018, after the first week of our trial had finished, they go to his home and basically kidnap him out of the home and put him in jail. They say flight risk. Now, he's been living there for decades. He's happily married there. There was no flight risk. He made it very clear to them that he was looking forward to this trial. He was keen. He was on time every day at the trial because he wanted to present his case to the world in the trial. So this was, they just didn't like that he was continuing to talk to the world. They very afraid of him, actually. This is good. You know, when, see, Alfred has no fear. When we lose our fear, they become fearful. They become
yes.
very fearful. They rule us by fear.
Yes.
They
fear intimidation. This. Yes.
And I'll tell you one more step to this layer of what you're not allowed to say or do, and especially in Germany, and that's at the heart of where this lie, you know, it starts and then it extends outwards. You see, so and I want to tie that in. During our discussion, Jim, with how it relates to what is going on in the world today with white people being under attack.
Yes.
And no, but this starts with this story, the Halle hoax, and Germany is kind of the heart of Europe. And I think that as Germany goes, the rest of the white race goes. So, but the third layer in this, so you're not allowed to say X, Y, Z. It's against the law. Let's just call it XYZ. Then you're on trial for this crime of speaking XYZ. And if you explain your conclusions or how you reached your conclusions or bring evidence to support your conclusions of reaching, you know, XYZ, that's a new crime. Then if you describe the situation that I'm describing to you right now, that is also an illegal act, because I'll give you an example. In Germany, Sylvia Stolz, this is a lawyer who was one of Ernst Sandl's lawyers in the trial in Germany, in Mannheim, Germany. She went to jail, got out for doing a job too well in bringing evidence into the court. This is during the Ernst Sandl trials in, I believe, 2006, 2007, something like that. And she was ordered to stop. She didn't stop. She explained exactly why she needed to continue to bring evidence. It's her obligation and her duty. And she kept on talking. They physically carried her out of the court. Imagine this. And then she was on trial for that very act of bringing evidence into the court. That's her job. Remember, she's a lawyer there. She's trying to bring forth a defense. And then she spent 3.25 years in jail. And after she got out of jail, she gave a speech in Switzerland at an anti-censorship coalition gathering. And in that speech, she described the situation, what had happened to her. She doesn't actually come out and say the Holocaust happened or didn't happen or this and that happened or didn't happen. She, I guess, by context, though, and describing what had happened to her, how she was taken out of the court, she was, bringing evidence and whatnot, that's not allowed in the German court. Then she was charged with that. When she got back to Germany, they laid new charges, went through the courts for a long period of time. In fact, the day that I was arrested, January 3rd, 2018, I was arrested right out of the court. It was her trial we were attending. Alfred and I and another friend, Henry Hoffmeyer, we went in to watch her trial and to support her, and I wanted to meet her. She's a hero to me. They did a recess. We were out in the corridor, and that's where they basically took me from. So how ironic. Okay, so that's sort of a full circle story of what happened. But Sylvia Stolz is now in jail. So she was still free at that time, free, unquote, unquote. But then in May of 2019, she was put into jail to serve her 18-month sentence for that speech. Jim, for that speech that she gave in which she described the situation, the legal situation, how you're not allowed to speak these things, you're not even allowed to bring evidence into the court, for describing that to the world in that speech, please, people, look it up. Sylvia Stolz, 2012, Switzerland. They've been trying to censor that and ban it off the whole internet, but I think you can still find it. And it's got subtitles on it because, of course, she's speaking in German in that speech. So English speakers, English people can still watch that. And you tell me, does that merit going to jail for 18 months? And actually, no speech merits going to jail at all. But, I mean, it's beyond absurd.
These are legal atrocities. I mean, what has happened in Germany? I mean, this is a nation with a great history. I mean, look, this is incredibly bad, Monica. Let me just say what Nick has turned up that I find fascinating. For example, what, you didn't know there was a British soccer team at Auschwitz? Look how cheerful these guys are, Monica. I like this photograph so much I put it on the back cover of the book, and I suppose we didn't go to the moon either. I mean, these guys are healthy and fit. Who knew they were playing soccer at Auschwitz? Here's a map of the prison of Auschwitz. And there are all kinds of facilities here that one would not expect. They had a concert hall. There was a woodworking shop. There was a hospital with a surgical unit, with obstetrical and gynecological block. I mean, there are all kinds of facilities for the inmates that were inconsistent with these having been centers for extermination. Here's another of the photos. Children being liberated from Buchenwald. They appear to be relaxed, well-fed, and trusting of the adults around them. Buchenwald experiences a bit of a problem with tourists who come expecting to be shown the gas chambers and have to be told, sorry, there never were any. Here's another, healthy-looking children at Birkenau being liberated by the Red Army. I mean, Monica, there seemed to be a general lack of understanding that thousands of children were born in these camps.
Exactly.
You know, unless I'm mistaken, it takes 9 months of gestation to produce an offspring. That's an awful lot of children to be born in extermination centers. I mean, this just shows the absurdity of the whole story.
Absolutely. Thanks for giving all those examples. There were children theater. I mean, they were putting on little plays. And there were marriages also taking place.
They even had a brothel. They had a brothel at Auschwitz.
And they had a cantina. The prisoners had coupons or some kind of a, you know, prison money that they could go and, you know, get stuff at the cantina. I mean, yes, they were held against their wills. So you could say, oh, okay, it was like, I mean, these were concentration camps. There's no question. Nobody is denying that. Nobody says there were no camps. No. It's about just whether there was some kind of deliberate plan.
So my book, of course, you see, the ADL asked Amazon if it would ban any book that disputed the official account of the narrative. So mine was one of over 200 books that were banned. But get this before we come to the break. We have a former Israeli politician. This was the former Minister of Education, Shulamit Aloni, who was given an interview. And here's the interview. Check this out.
Yours is a voice of criticism we don't often hear in the United States. Often when there is dissent expressed in the United States against policies of the Israeli government, people here are called anti-Semitic. What is your response to that as an Israeli Jew?
Well, it's a trick. We always use it. When from Europe somebody is criticizing Israel, then we bring up the Holocaust. When in this country people are criticizing Israel, then they are anti-Semitic. And the organization is strong and has a lot of money. And the ties between Israel and the American Jewish establishment are very strong. And they are strong in this country. As you know, they have power, which... it's okay, they are talented people and they have power, money and media and other things. And their attitude is Israel, my country, right or wrong, the identification. And they are not ready to hear criticism. And it's very easy to blame people who criticize certain acts of the Israeli government as anti-Semitic and to bring up
the Holocaust. I mean, there she is admitting it. It's a trick, she said. If it's in America, we claim you're being anti-Semitic. If it's in Europe, we bring up the Holocaust.
It's a trick.
Monica, anyone who has studied the Holocaust, anyone who looks at the evidence, is going to deny that 6 million Jews were put to death in gas chambers using Cyclone B. No one is going to deny that World War II was very bad. Millions of people, including millions of Jews, died during World War II. But frankly, I think 6 million is more than there were Jews in all of Europe at the time. I mean, the number is just a fantasy. It has theological origins. It has no historical or scientific basis. And one of the important elements of Nick Kullerstrom's new book, Breaking the Spell, is that he had access to the British death books. The British, of course, Alan Turing was involved in breaking the code for the German encryption. So that the British actually had copies of all of the documentation that the Germans were so meticulously maintaining so that Nick could compare the numbers from the International Committee of the Red Cross with the numbers from the death books in the UK of the German documents, and they converge. 296,081 from all causes, none of whom died from being put to death in a gas chamber using Zyklon B, even though Zyklon B was being used as a disinfectant to kill body lice because they were spreading typhus and dysentery. I mean, this story has to be one of the great monster lies, one of the great monster lies, well, appropriately called the Holo Hoax of all time, of all human history. And it's purely for political purposes because Israel gains a political advantage because of a Western sense of guilt over the Holocaust so that if the West were to learn the Holocaust was a fraud, that it was mythology, that it didn't really happen, they're going to lose their political clout, which is why you and Alfred and she have to be made examples and punished and widely publicized so no one will have any doubt, because Israel might lose its political edge. That's really what it's all about.
Yeah. So the Jews are the eternal victims in their narrative, their identity, their story, their what do you call it? Like how they think of themselves, right? They are the eternal victim, and yet it is like everything is on its head. Everything is on its head. But we're supposed to feel guilty for something that we never did, and since it's all turned on its head, the oppressors say they are the oppressed. It's the opposite, right? So Jewish power is the ability to prevent us from speaking about Jewish power. I think that's a line from Gilad Atzman, that, you know, Jewish power is their power to make it look like they are the victims, that they are the victims. Yeah. I want to just address something that you said that about, okay, yeah, in the war, lots of people died, including Jews died, but none under an extermination plan.
Right.
There were Jews who died of typhus and sickness. And I mean, these camps in the last few months of war were terrible places because supply lines were cut.
Because the Allies had bombed the German cities and cut the railroad lines and they couldn't resupply. I know Robert Torreson again has done a masterful job of explaining that. Monica, before we come to the break, let me just say, everyone's welcome to call in. The number is 540-352-4452, 540-352-4452, to talk to Monica Schaefer, who is a personal heroine of mine, Jim Fetzer, right here. I got her with me. This is wonderful. I'm delighted. And her brother, who's a noble beast. I mean, here's a man who's outspoken and fearless, is, of course, therefore sitting in a prison in Germany, because he won't bow down. He won't knee down. He won't get down on his knees, which, by the way, is what Black Lives Matter wants you to do today. And when we know the Rothschilds and George Soros and Hillary Clinton are behind all of this complete rubbish, the idea of getting rid of the police, how many votes do you think the Democrats are going to win with that campaign slogan, Monica? Defund the police. This is more idiocy. It's like the world is run by lunatics. It truly is, that the lunatics are in charge of the asylum. So I'm here with Monica Schaefer. We want to hear from you. The number 540-352-4452. I repeat, 540-352-4452. This is a unique opportunity to speak with a woman who has spoken out. She's been there, done that. She knows what's it about. She's been inside the courtrooms there, and I can verify. I've been through a trial where I was not myself allowed to present evidence in my own defense. The situation is completely absurd, and it's not just in Germany. It's even right here in the USA, right here in Madison, Wisconsin, sad to say. That's the state of the USA today. So let us hear from you. Let us hear from you. Mitchell will field your call. He'll get you on the air to talk to Monica and me. We'll be right back. About 3 minutes.
Okay, thanks. Should I mute or?
Yeah, we normally, I would have thought we would have already gone to the break, but maybe.
Lund was brought
I
to his compliments of the CIA, the neocons, and the Department of Defense, and the Mossad. Don't let yourself be played. Read America Nuked on 9/11. Available at moonrockbooks.com. That's moonrockbooks.com.
I will defend myself against their tyranny. Number 3 is my radio broadcast. I'm squarely in front of the public all the time, and they all know what's going on.
Well, we are opposed around the world by a monolithic and ruthless conspiracy that relies primarily on covert means for expanding its sphere of influence.
Hello, my name is John Wayne, and I do a broadcast here at freedomslips.com, revolution.radio, called The Unequivocal Truth. DEFCON 1.
Freedom and fear are at war.
And folks, I assure you, we are in defense condition 1. As we journey perilously through this paradigm that we currently reside in, and I ask that you join me every Saturday, 8 to 10 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, for the unequivocal truth, DEFCON 1.
We'll never surrender.
Was it a conspiracy? Did you know that the police in Boston were broadcasting, "This is a drill, this is a drill," on bullhorns during the marathon? That the Boston Globe was tweeting that a demonstration bomb would be set off during the marathon for the benefit of bomb squad activities? And that one would be set off in 1 minute in front of the library, which happened as the Globe had announced. Peering through the smoke, you could see bodies with missing arms and legs. But there was no blood. The blood only showed up later and came out of a tube. They used amputee actors and a studio-quality smoke machine. Don't let yourself be played. Check out And Nobody Died in Boston Either. Available at moonrockbooks.com. That's moonrockbooks.com.
All right. Thanks for listening while we took that short break here at Revolution Radio, freedomslips.com. And yeah, we're going to get back to your host.
Hey, Jim, we're back.
Mitchell, I went to get it.
Oh, that's okay. Hey, everybody, welcome back. Sorry about that. I went
to get a cup of ice water, Mitchell, and my timing was off.
Oh, yeah, that's okay. We got your brake fixed. That's all.
Let's bring in Giuseppe. I see he's the first on the list. Giuseppe from the District of Criminals, speak up, my friend.
Well, today, Jim and Monica, I'm going to assume the name of my other grandfather, my German-Austrian grandfather, Harvey, to honor Monica. I will be Harvey today. And so I got to tell you what an honor it is to hear you interviewed by the great Dr. Fetzer. And you're a personal hero of mine as well. I mean, what's lacking in this world today is moral courage and conviction, and you have so much of it, and I salute you. And the point I'd like to get your thought on is that, unfortunately, the Hollow Hoax to today's events, I think that you can look at it via the weaponized minority, because, you know, controlling factions of the Jewish nation have always, since the dawn of modern history, hated the white European, whether it was the Roman and on, and have sought to destroy the white culture. And so that weaponized minority has always been a malignancy. And 120 years ago, when Theodore Herzl and Samuel Untmeyer, you know, were able to compromise Woodrow Wilson to put in the traitorous Supreme Court Justice Louis Brandeis, and that led Wilson, could be compromised because he was having an affair with one of the professor's wives at Princeton, and so Untmeyer bought off the professor for $40,000 in that money, which would, I don't know, probably be a couple million today, bought his silence, and therefore forced the United States into Banker War One. And so that weaponized minority today is being used against the decent people of the United States. And so, except a different weaponized minority, the weaponized, there's two in the class struggle, there's two weaponized minorities. The Jews control everything in the Western world, and the blacks are the oppressed, useful minority that, like dry grass, every 2 years before a federal election here in the United States, you throw a match on it and it lights up. And so trying to benefit the party who is most serving the Jew. And the other thing, Jim, I'd like to observe is that you said that this is all benefits the nation of Israel. It does, but more importantly, it benefits, as Henry Ford said, the internationalist Jew, the globalist bankers. That's who's really raking it in. They're stealing hundreds of trillions of dollars from the economies of the Western world with all this nonsense, and it's all hidden by the first COVID-19 SARS-2 scamdemic, and now by the worldwide riots. It's just so offensive. So my question to Monica is, how do you think that, or is there any way to possibly save Germany from this terrible mind control entrainment that where they serve the evil Jew, and now the same thing is going on in America? Whereas I don't know if either of you are aware, during all the distractions, Trump signed a bill to make it mandatory to teach Holocaust education in the entire United States, which is just obscene.
Well, thanks for those fantastic observations and analysis of, you know, history and what's going on now. And as to Germany and how to get them off their knees, because they really were at the hardest hit with this re-education a la George Orwell program after World War II. And as much as that has happened, there is a massive awakening happening now, whether, and especially right now, because what people see in the street, it does not match what they see in their television screen, the devil vision screen. And that's already been happening for a few years now, more in the former East Germany than the West. I think they were even more indoctrinated in the West, you could say. In the East, where people who were already, like older people, they were already in a police state, so they were already were skeptical of what they're being told. They're already more aware that, you know, they're being deceived. Many people, anyway. In the West, we have this notion that freedom of speech, freedom of the press, we're being told the truth, you know, this trust, which I believed too until I woke up in about 2011. Excuse me. And, you know, I just always trusted what they told us until my eyes were opened, and then, you know, go down the rabbit hole and peel the layers of the onions off and see that, you know, basically almost everything we're being told are lies. As far as the German people rising, you know, I'm going to tell you about some, when I was in jail, I had my hands on this big, thick poetry book for a couple of weeks. I had it in my cell, and it was all these poems from Germans, Germanic people, from the oldest poems they could find, you know, like, I don't know, hundreds and hundreds of years old, maybe a couple thousand years old to the present. And some of the poems that I read from quite a long time ago, like hundreds of years ago, I was astounded because I thought, my goodness, this could be written now. It was about the sleeping people that, you know, when really things get hard and tough, that they rise up, and they did, and they rose up. It's like they've been put to sleep by being kept, as we are in Canada.
Hello?
Kept fat and happy, you know, and then you go to sleep.
What's that?
And, yeah. Sorry, go ahead.
No, no, no. That was just someone in the background who's trying to get on. Go ahead, Monica.
So, yeah. What I wanted to say is they have been in bad straits before. I don't know if it's been as bad as it is now, but Germans have been in bad straits before, and then they rose up. And it seems that they have been asleep before. Asleep as in, you know, not really understand what's going on, or now it's particularly bad with this re-education. I mean, I'll tell you, my cousins, who are very, very well-meaning people, they're the ones that I said in the first hour there that at the 2.5 minute mark of my video just exploded out of their chairs and they screamed, said, no, you're going to make Germany bad again. Germany was bad. Now Germany's good. You're going to make Germany bad again by saying what you're saying.
Giuseppe, I'm going to come back to you, my friend. Just hang around. Paul, come on, join the conversation.
Thank you. First, I would like to say much respect to this brave woman. It's a lonely and a daunting task to take the kind of stand
that she did, and she paid the price. The most I ever did in jail was 30 days, and that was enough. And it was completely unrelated, but it was also essentially me taking a stand, doing something that I didn't really need to do. And, you know, I could have just pled guilty and, you know, it would have been something very minor. But the bottom line is that there's so few of us out here in the world that are willing to say that the emperor has no clothes. I mean, you think about what has occurred. When I listened to the show, it just reminded me once again of how lies are supposed to be the truth. And truth is something that they can penalize you for. And it's just insane. I have a lot more to say, but I do have a quick question for you, Monica. When you were in jail in Germany, did you have some admirers, some friends, some fans? People were, how should I say, appreciative of what you did and said?
And are you talking about people within the jail or people from the world, from the outside world?
No, you're some of your fellow inmates, right? Did any of them recognize you for what you did and were on your side?
Oh, thanks for that question. That's great. Well, I'll tell you something. I educated quite a few people there. Now, when I, you know, we'd do the courtyard walk and we'd talk lots and in that 1 hour per day that we had to walk around. And I would tell, and the German women anyway, those are the ones that I'm talking about mainly. Now, not the minority were German. The majority were other people from elsewhere, other Europeans and Africans and whatnot. By the way, Alfred, the situation for him is much worse. It's 90% African or other parts and 10% white and Germans and whatnot. But anyway, back to your question.
In the German prisons, you're saying mostly most of the inmates are black?
In Alfred's prison, he says he feels like he's in an African prison with German staff. Honestly, that's how it is. It's the majority are dark. Anyway, and really, that's an alarm bell, like welcome to the future type of thing. Because you know. But back to your question, so I would say to them, you know, we'd ask each other, "What are you here for?" Of course, that's a normal conversation. I tell them, "I'm here for saying that I wasn't allowed to stay," and they would say, "Oh no, that's not possible. We have total freedom of speech in Germany." And I'd say, "Well, yeah," and I tell them about the topic, the Holocaust, and then they'd say, "Oh, that's different."
Yeah.
Okay, so, and like my cousins, they said, "Oh yeah, we have total freedom of speech, but not about the Holocaust," and that's good. Well, no, the prisoners are a lot easier to educate than the general public, let me tell you, because everybody's in there for something, and it could be completely different things, unrelated to the speech crime or whatever. However, they've had some kind of hardships in their life or hard times, or they're in prison. So they're much more open to learning stuff. So I did educate quite a few people about it who really, like the German prisoners, if they hadn't looked into this before, of course they believe the Holocaust happened. Of course, everybody does or did, you know. But it wasn't hard to explain things to them.
Paul, we have three other callers. I'm glad for you to hang around with Giuseppe, and I want to come back to you both. Let me turn to Bruce. Bruce, you have some questions here for Monica. Bruce? Well, if we're not hearing from Bruce, we have Daryl from the chat room. Daryl from the chat room, go ahead.
I think he was trying to chime in just now, wasn't he?
I couldn't quite make out the words. Go ahead and repeat yourself.
I'll just say I thought Bruce was trying to chime back in, but apparently not. Monica, you're putting out some really, really great stuff there. And, you know, you said a few analogies. And one I was really wondering about is, first of all, the people are easier to teach, you know, the ones that in prison, because they already realize the lie, so it's easier for them to accept the truth. But what my question is like during the leading up to World War II, is people kind of like the same thing that you talk about people learning in prison is, you know, people do not realize the lie and they're caught up in this false lie. And do you think, two-part question here, do you think the times we are now in, is it possible that the way they were lied to back then and they thought the liar was really putting out the honest truth, do you think we're going into that same type of situation of it being Trump? And the other thing is, whatever direction it goes, you know, the lie that we're being told, the analogy is like the frog put in a cold pan of water and slowly being heated up. How far do you think we've been in that cold pan of water, and how much closer are we to being boiled to death? Over.
Oh, my goodness. You know, that frog in the water is a really good analogy, because if this current situation had been dumped on us, let's say, I don't know, 60, 70, 80, 90 years ago, or even just 30 years ago or 20 years ago, that this whole lockdown, I don't know if that's what you're referring to, you know, to, is this going to go like the Holocaust, like with this corona hoax lie and what they're doing now with this, we would have immediately jumped out. Like the frog would immediately jump out if it's thrown into the boiling pot. But we've been so softened up with all these weaponized words and this degradation, the degeneration, you know, all these concepts and ideas that maybe sound really nice on the outside. Like before I woke up, you know, there's certain concepts that just sound so nice, like, you know, equality for everyone and equal opportunity and this and that. It all sounds really good. Like we got to be good and kind and nice. And we're also softened up with this guilt trip and, you know, that we're guilty of everything that ever went wrong on this planet, which is nonsense. They've lied to us about pretty much everything that they said that we're guilty of. And so the frog in water, anyway, back to your question. I don't think I'm really answering a question. Maybe just what was the question? Well, just
from the cold water to the boiling point where we're cooked to death. How far you think we're on in that process? And do you think that beginning of that same thing in World War II, you know, with Hitler, do you think possibly that we're in the same scenario now with Trump? Because, you know, you have to believe in your leader to lead you. And, you know, are we in the same scenario now as then? Over.
Yeah. Okay. Implying that this leading up to war. Oh my goodness. I mean, it's like we're already in a war, but a lot of people don't realize that because the bombs aren't being dropped on our heads right now. It's like the war has never stopped after World War II, but we certainly are in, as far as being indoctrinated and being misled, I think that's worse now than leading up to World War II. I don't think that at that time that the indoctrination wasn't the main factor at all, I don't think. But, you know, the Jews wanted war on Germany, and they since then have, you know, lied to us about who started the war and all that. But as far as right now, what's going on and what this could lead to, I mean, this is definitely something is brewing big time. As far as the frog in water, it's almost like they are throwing us into the pot of boiling water because of how fast they are doing things, like with the coronavirus, and then that was starting to wear off and they start the race wars. But this is almost like being thrown in. Like a lot of people are looking at this.
Daryl, why don't you hang around? Bruce is here now. Bruce is back. Bruce, go ahead. You have a question for Monica and me?
Yeah, and a couple statements, if I may. Do they have to be questions?
No, go ahead.
Okay. First thing I want to say is that In 1992, when I was in journalism school at Ryerson University in Toronto, my first year reporting class had the opportunity to go to Canada's first war crimes trial. It was Immer Finta. Are you familiar with him?
No, go ahead. I'm not. Go ahead.
Monica, have you ever heard of the Immer Finta trial in Canada?
No. Immer, is that a name of the person? Or no?
Immer Finta was a guard at a Hungarian camp, and he was being tried on war crimes in 1992 in Canada. He was in his 90s. Anyways,
was that from a World War II? Was that, in other words, a Nazi war crime he was supposed to have committed?
Yeah, I thought that was self-evident. Sorry. And his lawyer was a guy named Doug Christie, who became quite famous or infamous in Canada. You've heard of him?
Oh, yes, definitely. Another hero to me.
Okay, so you and I are probably the only two on the call who know who Doug Christie is. But I had the opportunity to talk to Doug, and I was in my 20s back then. And he told me straight up back then, he said, Bruce, the Holocaust is a hoax. I thought the guy was nuts. It took me about another 10 or 15 years to figure it out on my own, right? But I want to applaud your courage for just having, you know, the gumption to come right out and say it. I mean, International Red Cross and the Vatican records put it at about 272,000 dead. Now, I'm finishing up a book now on an unrelated topic, but the guy I'm writing the book with, his story is, he's German. And his grandfather was a rocket scientist who left Germany in 1933 because he didn't like Hitler, but was deep in the Nazi party. And he came over with his three sons, one of which is my subject's father. And they all joined the American army to go and fight the Germans, even though they just left Germany in 1933. And this fellow's uncle was the first guy into the Dachau camp. I just heard this story like a month ago. They had four incinerators, and it took 4 to 6 hours to burn one body. And the incinerators were just to dispose of people who died from famine. That's it. But my point is, there was no way that that many bodies, you know, could have been burned. Now, I want to say one other thing here, okay? We took the subway in Toronto from the university to the courthouse, the whole class. There was about 40 of us in this first year reporting class. We spent the whole afternoon in the court, and we watched Doug Christie cross-examine two witnesses and just eviscerate them. Immer Finta ended up losing and went to jail in Canada. But when we were riding home on the subway, I had two classmates who were Jewish, Corey Howard and Adam Snyder. Adam was furious and Corey was crying. And the reason I take the time to say this is the Jews don't know themselves. You know, as we break this information open into the public consciousness, we have to be very careful with their feelings, because they're hyper manipulated by their rabbis. Have you ever seen the documentary film done by an Israeli called Defamation about the anti-Semitic industry in Israel and how they raise the kids from kindergarten onwards?
No, it sounds like a winner.
Yeah, you guys. Anyways, those are the end of my comments. But mainly I want to say, you know, congratulations to you for having the courage to say. I used to do a show on this station, and I brought up the Hall of Hoax on a couple shows, and I got called an anti-Semite by other hosts at this station. I couldn't believe it.
You got it from a former Israeli minister that it's just a trick. She's admitting it openly. It's just a trick. And let me just add, Bruce, there are two other sources and you want to consult. The International Committee on the Red Cross recalibrated their numbers in 1993 and slightly adjusted downward to 296,081. Also, you want to get a hold of Nick Kohlerstrom's book, Breaking the Spell, because there he's comparing the British death books, where they'd broken the German code and they had all the documentation of about all the inmates and all the deaths. So he was able to compare the International Committee with the Red Cross numbers with the British death books, and they converged. So you want that for your research.
Yeah, thank you very much.
You're excellent. I like the way you present yourself. You are highly intelligent, very articulate. I'm very glad you called. Call again, please do.
Anytime. I'll take it off there now. Thanks, Monica.
Thank you, Bruce, for your comments. Also, I want to just, I think it's great that your journalism class got to go and listen to Doug Christie in action. That's fantastic. You know, just on a little tidbit here, our trial, they escorted two young people out of the public gallery just before they did the German translation of Off Your Knees, Germany. I believe it was that one, or Questioning the Holocaust. One of those two videos that I had recommended, you know, they're really good educational videos about the Holocaust. Anyway, they escorted these two articling students out. That's actually what my attorney, he was quite convinced that these two young German people that they escorted out of the public gallery were articling students, like they were going to be lawyers. This was too dangerous for them to hear this information.
Really?
And there were no groups of children attending our trial. Like, you know, there's always these field trips that schools do to go to the court and learn, or university students.
High school students, for example. Yeah.
They never came into our trial. That would have been absolutely verboten. Like, they would not have been allowed in there. I mean, it was already scary enough for the public to come attend our trial.
We have a call from the 850 area code. 850, give us your name and your state and join the conversation. 850.
Hey, Monica and Jim, this is... Hello? Hello?
Yeah, we hear you.
Me?
Yes.
Hello?
We've got you.
This is Michael in North Carolina.
Okay, Mike.
I'm talking.
Joyce, tell us.
This is Michael in North Carolina. I'm the guy who helped to get you guys together.
Very good. Yes. Excellent. Good work. Well done. We're both very appreciative.
I just wanted to say I love both of you. Is there a delay here? It seems like we're talking across each other.
No, I think you got contact. Just go ahead. Say what you'd like. Anything you'd like. Go ahead, Michael.
Okay, one point on your bringing up the Red Cross 296,000 death figure. It's my understanding that that is the number of all deaths in all the camps.
Yeah.
Not just Jewish deaths.
That's right.
The great majority of those people were not Jewish.
Yes.
Okay.
All race, all ethnicity, yeah, total combined, including Jews, gypsies, you know, the infirm, whoever died in the camps. 296,081 total from all causes combined. Yes, you're 100% correct. Good clarification.
And just wanted to make that point. And there's two just general statements I'd like to make. One is a famous quote from Karl Marx. And the quote is, "The first battlefield is the rewriting of history." Yeah. And that goes right along with Orwell's Ministry of Truth. And, of course, the rewriting of history is what they've done with World War II history. And there's an analog in the present, in as much as they're rewriting American history to represent American history as one gigantic racist enterprise, which also is like the instilling of guilt into the white populace, just like they did in Germany.
Yeah, it seems to be a tool of manipulation. I think you're exactly right, Michael. I'm very glad you wrote about having Monica come on the show because I'm a huge fan. Very good. Let me bring back Giuseppe. Giuseppe, I'm sure you have further thoughts, and then we'll go to Paul. Giuseppe.
Well, this is Harvey. And I just got off a call with my handler from the ADL, Shlomo Lifshitz, and he's proposing a solution that if we have Monica go to the National Holocaust Museum in Washington, D.C., and take a knee and weep crocodile tears, but I did get the concession that the mask she should wear has a swastika.
That's about the state of absurdity in politics in America today. Paul, go ahead. Paul.
Yeah, very, very good, Giuseppe there. Nice little drop.
You know, here's what I wanted to say real quick. Is bring it back to the current events here of what's going on. You know, the past is important, but I don't think there's any way that we'll be able to wake enough people up to the past to make any difference. However, present events is a lot more, how should I say, telling and pertinent, and I think we do have a chance. There's a lot more people that are coming on board. You can read even in regular sites, you know. I go through Yahoo News to get to my mail, and as usual, the stories are many times just sickening and disgusting. And they'll have comments on there, but they'll only last a day or two before they go ahead and they delete them. And a lot of the comments are by people that are awake to what's going on. Just real quick, I thought I'd mention a little bit about this George Floyd. Right, there's a guy who's written a couple of comments which are excellent, and I'm going to just sort of read a few excerpts of it, but this one, these are very good, actually. It says here, the George Floyd show has completely taken over mainstream media in a way that tells you, if nothing else, that this is a project, it's made up and it's manufactured. And then he goes on to say, at the current toll, and I believe this was 2 days ago, George Floyd's GoFundMe account is $13 million and counting, with allegedly 125 countries contributing, all supposedly to pay, you know, burial and funeral expenses and travel expenses for relatives and so on and so forth. So, Jim, I think that probably, you know, touches your heart there with the huge, you know, amount of money raised from Sandy Hook.
Well, as I've observed, George Floyd was notable for his versatility. Not only meth, but phenol, and he not only assault and battery, but armed robbery. He even has time for porn. The man truly was a man for all seasons.
So here's another great line where it says, the 2 weeks between Floyd's alleged death and burial is right at the maximum you can expect for a corpse to hold up. The weight of the coffin may indeed well come from bricks left over from the rioting, which would be a fine inside joke. So one more thing really quick from essentially the same commenter in another spot is about Al Sharpton, which I think he makes some great observations, and here they are. It says, watching the sanctification of George Floyd has led me to observe a few things, one of which is that the oily sanctimoniousness of Al Sharpton remains timelessly disgusting. Sharpton has made his career climbing up the backs of aggrieved blacks for as long as I've been alive, and his seemingly eternal presence on television and in the newspapers has been guaranteed by those who would shape our perception of reality through the media. Why make Sharpton the star of the latest racial injustice? Because most whites will find him in. And here's a nice point that he makes. Why make Sharpton a star of the latest racial injustice? Because most whites will find him intolerably offensive, diminishing the possibility of any increased understanding or empathy between blacks and whites, therefore furthering division, which is the whole goal of the George Floyd PSYOP in the beginning, and so on and so on. And he goes also quickly to go on to question exactly who Sharpton is and where he came from, and There's a controversy on Wikipedia as to when he was proclaimed a minister, and some people say
at the age of 10 or 12. George Floyd just speaks for himself. The latest report I have is he even was at one point working for the Clinton Foundation, if you can believe, and that the financiers of the uprising are the Rothschilds, Hillary, and George Soros, which makes perfect sense. I mean, the whole thing is so absurd. The idea of defunding the police is complete idiocy. After all the lockdowns and the Democratic governors and mayors resisting getting the people back to work, I don't see how they're going to garner a single vote in 2020. I think it's that bad. They're doing everything, not only shooting themselves in the feet, but cutting off their own heads. It's just a most ridiculous performance of a major political party in American history. Paul, go ahead.
Yeah, thanks for that little bit of time. Come back to me later. I have another great comment I'm going to read. It won't be as lengthy, but yeah, okay. Thank you.
Okay, Giuseppe, come back to Giuseppe.
May I?
Jim, I think you're not factoring in your idea of the Trump landslide, the fact that so many whites of middle to slightly upper middle class pursuits have Trump derangement syndrome and cannot do anything but blame him. So they could run John Wayne Gacy as a candidate, and he would still get 42%.
Look, we even have the latest Rasmussen poll has 40% of likely black voters supporting Trump, even in the midst of all this nonsense.
Which well, I hope that's the case.
Hey, Giuseppe, are you trying to allege that John Wayne Gacy may have faked his own death so he could run for president?
Hey, if we still have Michael from North Carolina, Michael, come on back in if you have more to add.
After he does, I would like
okay, to say just a short thing. Based on something Monica said earlier about how they control us with fear.
Yeah.
It reminded me of a lyric to a contemporary Christian song. The chorus goes, "Don't you be afraid of giants in your way. With God, you know that anything's possible. Step into the fight. He's right here by your side. The stones inside your hand may be small, but watch the giants fall."
Oh, that's good.
Okay, good. Like, but Michael, like to... Daryl, was that you wanting to add a further word or two? Go ahead, Daryl.
Yes, the main thing I wanted to say before I say that subject matter mentioned after that is I kind of wonder if this is a whole new thing about like Sandy Hook. You know, he was put a knee to his neck.
Yeah,
is it all fake? Is he actually really dead? The main thing I wanted to mention is years ago, you know, when my mind was first waking up, me and a friend got in discussion about donating to good causes and stuff, and Salvation Army was brought up and Red Cross was brought up, and he was very, very passionate when he mentioned that he was in one of those type of situations. It was a hurricane. I forget which one it was, but he said the difference between the Red Cross and the Salvation Army is the Red Cross was there selling sandwiches. And the Salvation Army was giving people what they needed. Over.
Yeah, that's very interesting. I don't know if Bruce is still here. I'd be very pleased if Bruce were still here to add further thoughts. Bruce, did you disappear or are you still here? Let's go back to Giuseppe. Giuseppe, further thoughts.
Well, I just, in all seriousness now, to me, the greatest crime these days is the censorship that was done to Monica, to Alfred, to yourself, Dr. Fetzer, and to so many others, including Nicholas Colostrum, including Brian Rue, who's a sweet, zany guy and a good researcher. And, you know, it's so funny that the average American normie, is so entrained that if they did none of this censorship, probably the 80% of people wouldn't have looked at it anyway and didn't look at it. But now that they're censoring this, at some point, people are going to wake up because they've gone way, way too far.
I think so too. This is so idiotic. What they're proposing is so ridiculous. I don't see how anyone with any reason whatsoever could be impressed other than negatively. I mean, the Democrats are just throwing away votes right and left. They're doing it to themselves deliberately.
And I'd like to ask Monica, how is she overcoming censorship? I know she has the website. I subscribe to her email list and always look forward to her emails. Has she found any free forums that are working well for her to get her message out?
I just do the occasional little article on my website, freespeechmonica.wordpress.com. And then I am just, like, as far as censorship, I mean, you know, they take down a lot of videos. Like, they took down Alfred's channel, my brother Alfred's channel. But if you know the titles of his videos, you can put them in the search bar and you can find those videos, because many people downloaded and re-uploaded all those things. And same thing with my Sorry Mom video. Of course, that went down from its original channel, YouTube. They did a big purge. And, you know, I had my neighbors in Jasper celebrating that. Oh, they banned all the Nazis. Yay. But, you know, people re-uploaded those. So find those things. I mean, as fast as they try to censor things, people...
If anyone... Yeah, if anyone wants to see a short take, you know, that covers the bases here, they can find my The Holocaust Narrative, Politics Trumps Science online. Just search for it by the title. You'll find it there. It used to be available several places, but the censorship that's ongoing is so ridiculous that practically no reasoning, no serious research, no scientific investigation of the authenticity or lack thereof of the Holocaust is any longer available. Just as Amazon banned, may have been as many as 2,000 books at the request of the ADL. We got Corey coming in from the chat room. Corey, join the conversation.
Hi, Jim. And hi, Monica. Is Monica still there?
Yeah, we're here. Go ahead, Corey.
Okay, Monica, I was just wondering, like, I'm from Canada. And I'm just wondering if you could make a comment about Elizabeth May and the Green Party and how they, you know, basically treated you after all this broke.
We couldn't quite make out all the words, Corey.
I said Elizabeth May. Yeah. Elizabeth May of the Green Party. Oh, my goodness. Let me tell you, she went from way up there in my esteem, you know, I just used to worship her. I thought she was just the greatest human being alive, to way down there, because she showed her true colors. Plus, she stabbed me in the back. Let me tell you, by deception. After my video came out, I had already distanced myself from the Green Party of Canada with a big letter to her explaining why. And it had more to do about 9/11 than anything else, and how the Green Party was not wanting to look at that. And even though she privately had admitted that, she didn't believe the official story, all that. But anyway, long story short, I had already written my letter of resignation from the party about almost a year before my video came out. And she had responded to it personally. So I know it wasn't just an assistant that dealt with that. And she has a good memory and memory of an elephant. Then when my video came out, she did a press release and a like mainstream media in Canada, they all get this, you know, from her saying, oh, we're going to, at the earliest opportunity, you know, throw Monica Schaefer out of the Green Party. It was total lies and deception. I'd already taken myself out.
Right. That's news to me. I didn't know that.
Yeah, when it comes to anything Israel or Jewish, I mean, she puts on the face as if she's standing up for the Palestinians. But let me tell you, she is under their thumb like you wouldn't believe.
Monica, can you expand on the politics of the Green Party? Is this true of the U.S. Green Party as well as the Canadian, that they're a Marxist party, basically? Was that your implication?
Absolutely. They are the Communist Party. All you need to do is look at some of the quotes from the German Green members of parliament. The thing is, there's the global Green.
Being censored because of your comments about the Green Party. Go ahead, make them again.
You look at what the German Greens are saying, and they're saying it publicly, they're saying it in their parliament. They basically want the end of the German people, and they want completely open borders. And, you know, when they say, you know, diversity, and I used to think that really meant diversity of nature and, you know, species and truly what, you know, diversity means, but it's erasing human diversity is what it really is. I mean, erasing all culture, and they are absolutely a communist party. So, yeah, that applies to the Canadian Greens for sure. And I mean, Elizabeth May showed her true colors when it came time.
That's very, very disappointing. We have another caller, Bill from Down Under. Bill, join the conversation. Oh,
jeez.
Bill.
What do you
say? Jim, I'm here. I couldn't unmute my phone. The button wouldn't work.
Go ahead.
Can I talk again? Can I talk?
Yes.
Go.
Yeah. Okay. I've got a couple of thoughts. That Israel guy, that one that you had the quote from where they banned the book, that's unbelievable, that quote. You know, the one where they're going to manipulate the black people and that?
Was that a quote from Marx?
Yeah.
No, Israel Cohen quote. Israel Cohen.
Yeah, Israel Cohen. That's
Israel
it.
Cohen.
Israel
yeah,
Cohen.
That's
what was on the field,
right.
Jim.
Israel Cohen. Yeah. I gave a quote from him from the show the other day. Yes, yes.
Yeah,
go ahead.
That's where I got it from. And it was on the other show as well. And another thing I'd like to mention is this. I'm not that good on history, and I missed a lot of the show today, but remember the First World War started because of that prince got shot in Yugoslavia or somewhere?
Yes.
Yeah? Well,
looks
like this George Floyd. One person dies and all the other people get killed. You know what I mean? It's the same sort of thing. One person gets killed and then everyone else gets killed, you know, because of one person. Do you think there's a similarity there?
Yeah, that's the Jewish media. That's a similarity.
Paul, why don't you address that? Because I didn't figure out what Bill was trying to say. Paul, go ahead.
This started because of one man getting killed, right? Millions got killed.
Yeah.
And now,
everybody's
getting killed because George Floyd got killed. One person,
It's manipulation of the public mind by those who control the information and the spin on the information.
Exactly.
I mean, if I can go on for a minute or two, here's the thing is, you know, we can talk.
Bill, hold on. Paul's responding to you. Go ahead, Paul.
Well, this will be a little bit of an ongoing thing, but I'll try not to take too long. But yeah, we have real issues and real problems, and I think everybody knows this. I mean, it's very evident that we have a large non-white underclass, which historically has been the death knell for every white society, and it's growing. They're doing everything to ensure that a white man can't get a decent job and support a family, which is one of the reasons our birth rates are declining. And they're also bringing in, by the hundreds of thousands and the millions, non-white to every white country they can do it to. And there's make no mistake about it, they want us to be ruled by non-whites. And this does not bode well. You can look at many examples of where this has occurred, and I highly encourage anybody to periodically go on to nationalalliance.com, listen to National Alliance Radio. You can hear Dr. William Pierce talking about this back in the 90s. And he gave examples of what happened in three different African nations when they made the mistake of A, giving blacks the vote, and then B, letting them hold political office and then eventually ruling them. And you can see what's happening in South Africa now, where they estimate that as many as one-third of all whites are living below the poverty line, and in many cases they're in squatter camps. And they are continuing this day to kill whites on their own farms, and basically the government in place mostly does not solve these cases and let them get away with it. So we got some serious issues to deal with, and it's just a reminder. So
thanks. Well, Bill's trying to get a word in edgewise. Bill, go ahead.
Go ahead.
Go ahead, Bill. Is 850 still here? Corey, are you still here? Corey, from the RR chat room, are you still here? Giuseppe, go back to Giuseppe, my friend.
Yes, I'm here. Paul's excellent point even can be elaborated on further, which is the low-life operatives who put that scam together, that op together, made sure it was videoed with the evil looking cop staring right into the camera. I mean, for extended, it's like a bad acting, like bad porn where you're just looking right into the camera and it's horrifying. And they know based on their, you know, nearly 100 years of mind control studies dating all the way back to the Frankfurt group, that's the type of effect that will just set people off in fear and anger and paranoia. I mean, this is, and then Paul's point, it just is fomented like putting a Mentos mint in a bottle of Coke. Like you see those videos where it just explodes out the top, which is we're viewing the explosion right now.
Well, we got
a, may I ask Monica a question, please?
Go ahead.
Yeah. Go ahead.
Mm-hmm. Monica, you've seen this latest thing in the news about Trump, speaking about pulling troops out from Germany and reducing the number of troops. What's your opinion on what the public in Germany, we all see what the mainstream puts out, but the real news would be from the individual people speaking out on that idea. I feel that you have something greatly you contribute to the truth on that matter. Over.
Well, I can't actually say what the public, the Joe Blow public, but I know that a lot of people who understand what's going on, they will be happy about it. I mean, very few Germans, though, know and understand that they actually are not a sovereign country. They never did sign a peace treaty at the end of World War II. They technically, it's still the Reich, and even the under the United Nations, they are not called a nation or a country. Germany is not a sovereign country, but very few people actually know and understand that. Now, as far as the general public, how they will react to Americans pulling out troops, I think they will probably react with joy, I would think, but I can't really tell you. I haven't really been in communication with that many people that I would be able to give you
You actually confirmed what my feelings are, is I think they would truly rejoice on that, because you cannot be a true sovereign country when someone else is occupying your country. Over.
Absolutely. They are occupied. It's occupied country. And even if most of the people don't actually understand that that is technically the case, that they're not a sovereign nation, they still know that there's all these American bases around. And
I know, I would make the case, though, that the military occupation is nowhere near as important as the Jews controlling the politics and the money of it.
Absolutely.
That is the ultimate occupation.
Absolutely. I mean, yes, American occupation, but Jews control America, so it's Jewish occupation, and absolutely, you're 100% correct. It's Jewish.
Are they two of the same? Over.
What do you mean, two of the same?
Well, was it Sharon or Netanyahu who said, don't worry about what the Americans...
America. Sharon.
He said we
control America. We own America, and the Americans know it. Don't worry about them.
That's right. So
it was Netanyahu who said we're going to suck America dry, and when we're done, we're going to tear it apart, because that's what we do with countries we hate.
Exactly.
Yeah, it's unbelievable. Yeah. Let me mention, by the way, since we're running short of time, that after this show at 8 p.m. Central, 6 p.m. Pacific, 9 p.m. Eastern, I have this new program, Jim, The Conspiracy Guy, where I've done two. They're on Sundays, but I've moved the 2 hours earlier. The first was on coronavirus 2 weeks ago. A week ago, it was on the moon landing. Tonight, it's on the New Zealand shootings. Were they real or a political stunt to watch? You have to go to JimTheConspiracyGuy.com, JimTheConspiracyGuy.com, and that'll be in an hour after this show ends, JimTheConspiracyGuy.com. Some pretty interesting footage taking it apart. Monica, I'm just so delighted to have you here. And, Voltaire observed that if you want to know by whom you are controlled, just find out who you are not allowed to criticize. And I think we're finding out it's pretty obvious who you're not allowed to criticize. And when you have such a monstrous deception as a Holocaust, the claim that 6 million Jews died when there almost certainly weren't even 6 million Jews in all of Germany when the International Red Cross has records, which they've recalibrated, showing it was a total of 296,081 from all causes combined, none of whom were put to death in death chambers when you had the Zundel trials. And you had Fred Lauchter with his report that none of the facilities at any of the camps were suitable to serve as gas chambers. It's pretty obvious we're being played. And I just say, if anyone wants more, you know, check out what you can learn about Monica online. I think everyone would like to watch your little 6-minute video, Monica. So, you know, I want you to have the opportunity for the few last words here.
Thanks. I want to echo what one of your callers said about William Luther Pierce. Fantastic speaker, and listen to some of his talks. Just absolutely fantastic. We just need to look at South Africa and what is going on there to see what they want to do with us here. And we must absolutely resist. We must stand up. We must wake up, shed our fear. Civil disobedience is in order now. We need to not obey their rules about, you know, lockdown and closing shop and this and that. So we, at the same time, never lose hope. They want us to think there's no hope and no future. They put out all kinds of, you know, films to give us that notion that there's no hope, no future. But if we actually accept that, then there is no hope and no future. So we must shed our fear and always, like, live life that there is a future, even if it looks dark. And yes, sometimes it looks very dark. They seem to be very strong right now. What can I say? Alfred is in jail. If you want to have his address to write letters to him, go to my website, because the sticky post at the top will give you his address. And the website is freespeechmonica.wordpress.com, and spell Monica with a K. So all one word, freespeechmonica.wordpress.com. And I occasionally publish a letter there, and a few other thoughts and things are there. But letters are good. It shows the authorities too that he's not forgotten. Plus, if you do write with your return address, he'll write you back. And he does write fantastic letters.
Well, Monica, I just want to say on behalf of all of us that you and Alfred are our heroes today. History has cast you in a certain role to which you have proven more than equal. Your intelligence, your integrity, your courage, and your determination to stand up for the truth in spite of overwhelming odds against you, even punishment inflicted upon you, has been magnificent in ensuring that you cannot...
Thank you for listening to Revolution Radio.
It is no secret that the so-called mainstream media is best described as controlled propaganda. Countless news stories are either totally ignored or spun with half-truths, and because of this, essential facts and vital information are often compromised. Join Dr. Ott every Friday night on Studio B at 10 p.m. Eastern and learn why The Story Behind the Story was nominated for a Peabody Award in its second year of producing unparalleled broadcasting excellence in 1997. That is, if you really care about learning the truth.
If you think for one second that the Capitol will ever treat us fairly, you are lying to yourselves. Because we know who they are and what they do. This is what they do, and we must fight back. You can torture us and bomb us. Fire is catching. And if we burn, you burn with us.
Good evening.
Are you awake yet? I hope. We've tried and we've tried for years and years to use passive resistance and loud voices to make a change. The time is over. Your governments around the world